House Fisheries Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 5:06 p.m. on Tuesday, March 29, 2011. Present with us today is we have Representative Miller, Representative Osterman, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Chairman Representative Thompson. At today's agenda, we will be holding confirmation hearings on administration appointees to the Board of Fisheries. Up for consideration, we have the appointments of Sue Jeffrey and the reappointment of current board members John Jensen and William Brown. Following the confirmations, the committee will begin consideration of House Bill 85 relating to mixing zones. As a note, please everybody turn off your cell phones. Just putting them to vibrate will not work because even the vibration will interfere with the sounds with the recording system. First, the committee will bring forward the candidates individually and allow them the chance to make a brief statement before questioning. Do we have them online or?
Some online.
Sue Jeffrey, are you online? Ms. Jeffrey?
Chairman Thompson, I am here in Kodiak at the LIO office.
Thank you. Would you please place yourself on the record and tell us a bit about yourself?
Yes, of course. My name is Sue Jeffrey, and I have submitted my name to the Board of Fish because I would like to be able to pay back to the state the wonderful opportunity I've had involved with fisheries. I want to use my fisheries knowledge and background experience and serve on the Board of Fish to help conserve and develop the fishery resource of the state of Alaska as the Constitution mandates. Do you want me to speak further to my resume, or will you ask further questions then?
Yeah, well, go ahead and cover a little bit of your resume. You can kind of synopsis it a little bit. Go ahead.
Sure. Currently, I am serving on the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly. I've served, this is my second term. I started serving in 2005. And I'm also in that capacity a borough representative on the it's a joint city borough Kodiak Fishery Advisory Committee, and I've served on that since it was formed in 2007. I began my experience in fisheries as a cannery worker way back in the early 70s, and I'm currently a commercial salmon fisherman at our family fish site, and we've been doing that for 25 years. Also, you know, consistently, you know, personal use or subsistence halibut, salmon fish. I was a fisheries reporter and editor for the Kodiak Daily Mirror, and also did several freelance writing for fisheries publications such as the Pacific Fishing and other, and Anchorage Daily News. I was at one point, a co-owner of a commercial crab fishing vessel that fished Tanner and King Crab in the Kodiak area and in the Bering Sea, and have been for a long time involved in serving the community in various capacities. I believe so much in the public process, fair, open public process. I understand how important that is, especially considering the mandate of the Board of Fish to do that balancing act of conserving and at the same time maximizing the benefit of Alaska's marine resources for its people. So I appreciate the time, and I am very honored at the appointment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffrey. Members, have any questions of Ms. Jeffrey? Seeing none, we'll open up the public testimony. As a online, we have comments from the appointment of Ms. Jeffrey by Don Fox. Are you online there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, if you'd please place your state your name and affiliation for the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
He's talking to me. Okay. My name's Don Fox. I'm a 40-year resident of Kodiak, and I've been a member of our local Fish and Game Advisory Committee for 20 years and its secretary for 10. And I've attended a lot of Board of Fish meetings representing the advisory committee, so I know the board process. And I'd also like to put in that I support the confirmation of Mr. Brown and Mr. Jensen, too, because I've observed them. But I've known Sue for 30 years, and I've supported her on the borough assembly. She's smart, intelligent. She always does her homework. She's always prepared for every meeting, and she's a good listener. She works well with people. And when she was the fisheries or for the paper, she people probably read newspapers who do fishery reporting and things like that. And sometimes you'll read articles where, you know, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. But she knows the fishery. She understands them. And I wish she was still our fishery reporter for our paper. But she is an outstanding candidate, and I think she would do a really good job on the Board of Fish. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. We've been joined by Representative Herron. Is there anybody else online? Anybody in the room like to testify on the appointment of Ms. Jeffrey? Hearing none, public testimony for Ms. Jeffrey is closed. Are there any further questions or comments from the committee members regarding the appointment of Ms. Jeffrey? Hearing none, then we'll move on to John Jensen. Mr. Jensen is online also. Mr. Jensen, can you hear us?
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name's John Jensen. I'm from Petersburg. I've been on the board approximately 9 years to date. I was born and raised and live in Petersburg. I graduated from Petersburg High School. I'm a third-generation Alaska fisherman. I've commercially fished since 1965. I've owned and operated six different fishing vessels in my career. I participated in the fisheries in southeast Alaska, Bristol Bay, Gulf of Alaska, Bering Sea, Aleutians, Alaska Peninsula, Cook Inlet, Prince William Sound, Western Alaska. I've attended Merchant Marine Training Services in Seattle, and acquired a 100-ton master's license. And the reason I reapplied for this job, and I emphasize the word job, it is a big job, because I want to do whatever I can to do, keep our fisheries sustainable for the future. Our fisheries are here forever if we take care of them, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Members of the committee have any questions for Mr. Jensen? Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jensen, what has been your approach as member of the Board of Fisheries in dealing with allocation of fish between subsistence, sport, and commercial fisheries?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I try to keep it fair and balanced. We have a portion of our criteria that's called the allocation criteria, and there's 8 points in that where you look at the history and the participation of the different user groups, and that's where I try to balance it out and be as fair as I can based on the history and the participation of the users.
Go right ahead, Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jensen, one more question. How have you supported actions with your time on the board to address the low salmon runs on the Yukon?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, last cycle we did some adjustments on nets with the hopes that we might work with a different size group of salmon and maybe try to get a bigger variety of spawners up the main river there to all the way through Canada as our treaty with Canada requires. And over the years we've watched this fishery seem to keep declining, and it's really nerve-wracking, and we're trying to figure out ways to do whatever we can. There's all sorts of finger pointing on different user groups that might be harming the fishery, but I still think we're faced with some pretty serious ocean mortality problems.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you. John, do you serve on the protocol committee between the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the Board of Fish?
Yes, I do, Representative Osterman.
Can you talk to us a little bit in reference to bycatch issues on salmon, both in the Bering Sea, which I think is the council has come taking care of that pretty much, but they're still dealing with the Gulf of Alaska, Central Gulf. Can you discuss a little bit about what's going on there and your position?
Through the chair, Representative Osterman. Yeah, we're there. I think the council is in the planning and not quite the implementation of a plan for the Gulf of Alaska fish. As you know, you mentioned that there already is pretty comprehensive plan for the Bering Sea. At this meeting they're having, which starts in a couple days, they're going to have quite a bit of discussion on different elements and different plans on what to do about bycatch. And as you know, they've recently implemented an observer program for vessels under, well, all vessels, but I think the under 60s are going to be observed quite a bit more because of the high bycatch of king salmon last year in the trawl fishery, Representative Osterman.
Just follow up on that, John. I assume that conversation has taken place within the protocol committee between the Board of Fish and the North Pacific Council, and I'm just wondering if the board has taken a position encouraging or asking for a certain cap limit or anything on the bycatch.
Through the chair to Representative Osterman, no, we have not. We mentioned it and we tossed it around a little bit at the last meeting, but it never got came to fruition. I thought we should have probably wrote a short letter saying that at least we thought the bycatch was too high, especially for last year.
On a follow-up, Mr. Representative Osterman?
A different subject. John, Representative Heron asked about sport fish personal use and then subsistence. Do you have a priority in your own mind in reference to when you talk about sustainability of our resources, of the user groups between subsistence, personal use, and commercial?
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, the priorities in order for me anyway is to provide for sustainability first, and then the next on the list would be for subsistence usage, and then whatever fish are left over that are divided among the other users. Mr. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Any other members have questions of Mr. Jensen? Seeing none, we'll open it up to public testimony. Online we have some people. Max Warhatch. Max, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, if you place your name on the record and give us your testimony, we'd sure appreciate it.
All right. My name is Max Warhatch. I'm a resident of Petersburg and a commercial fisherman and sport fisherman and subsistence fisherman. And I've known John for probably, I don't know, 30 years, 35 years. I've fished with him. I know him quite well. He takes his job very serious. He works hard at it. He does all his research. And I think he's very fair-minded, being a sports fisherman himself. I think he's a really good choice. Thank you.
Yeah. Questions of Mr. Warhatch from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to Julianne Curry. Julianne, are you on the phone?
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. If you place your name on the record and give us your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Julianne Curry. I'm the Executive Director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association. I'm up here in Anchorage right now participating in the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meetings, but I wanted to call and stress our support for the reappointment of John Jensen to the Board of Fish. We're a multi-gear, multi-species membership group. My members participate in fisheries from Ketchikan to the Bering Sea, and they participate in almost every single fishery in Southeast Alaska. My members have known John for a long time and worked alongside him, and me personally, I've known John for a very long time, almost my entire life. And because of that, I don't hesitate to ask John if he's crazy for wanting to serve on the Board of Fish, because it's such a thankless job. But I think him putting his name in every time and working so hard is a real testament to the fact that he believes in the resources of this state and he wants to do what is best for the state of Alaska fishery resources. John can be a fantastic board member and continue to be a fantastic board member because he will always, 100% of the time, put the resource first. We value his role as a good board member because he's accessible by the public. He has a deep institutional knowledge of the fisheries of the state and understanding of the different user groups who rely on those fisheries. He He treats the staff with respect at all times, and he puts the science at the forefront of his decision-making. He's also respectful of the public, which is critical to Board of Fish participants feeling like they are respected within the process. So with that, I would like to fully support Mr. Jensen for reappointment to the Board of Fish, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Curry. We appreciate it. Any questions of Ms. Curry? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next one online. We have Robin Samuelson. Samuelson. Robin, are you on the phone?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to vote.
If you please state your name, please state your name and your affiliation for the record. Go ahead, and we'll hear your testimony.
Sure. Robin Samuelson, fisherman, Bristol Bay. I'd like to oppose Mr. Jensen's appointment to the Board of Fish. Mr. Jensen has done a marvelous job in sustaining the resources, but he doesn't support coastal communities of Alaska. In Bristol Bay, we had the 32-foot limit. Mr. Jensen's voted against all the advisory committees and local fishermen. We're trying to rebuild our fishery out there, keep more participants in the fishery, and it seems that Mr. Jensen is more concerned with making the rich richer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions of Mr. Samuelson? Hearing none, thank you very much for your testimony. We'll now turn to the room. We have nobody else online. Anybody like to come up and testify on the appointment? We have two people that are headed this way.
Can I say so?
Yes, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry McCune. I represent United Fishermen of Alaska as a large statewide group, the only statewide group, actually. 38 different groups and four members at large. We support John. He's been on the board for a long time, John Jensen, and he has extensive experience and has been around the state probably three times now, so he's probably heard quite a few different issues and has the experience to be able to sit on the board.
Questions of Mr. McCune? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next. Hi, give us your name and your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
Hi, my name is Ricky Geese. I'm the Executive Director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We'd like to go on record in full support of John Jensen for being reappointed to the Board of Fisheries. As other people have said, he has a full knowledge of the Board of Fisheries process. He's always courteous, thorough in his deliberations and participation in the process as a board member. He's been around the state three times, so it's nice that he has a good knowledge, working knowledge throughout the state, and can apply that. I think his knowledge in many different commercial fisheries serves the board well, and he's a valuable member of the current board. Thank you.
Questions? Hearing none. Online, we still have Steve Brown. He wants to testify. Well, actually, yeah. Mr. Brown, are you online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I am.
If you'd speak up a little closer to the phone, we'd appreciate it. Please give us your name and your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
My name is Steve Brown, resident of Holmer, commercial fisherman, and also president of Concerned Area Fishermen, which represents salmon fishermen on the Alaska Peninsula. And I'm in a little bit of a time squeeze here, with your permission, I'd like to just make a comment in support of the slate of candidates that you have before you. I do not know Sue Jeffrey personally, but she's well regarded by people in the community of Kodiak that whose opinions I respect, and I think it's important that the board have representation from that area, Central Gulf of Alaska, and by all accounts, from I think she'll do a fine job. I want to echo some of the other comments for John Jensen. I've been at the Board of Fish meetings when John has been on the board. I found him to be a very good board member. He's approachable. He's willing to listen. He's easy to talk to. And what's really important to me in a board member, a characteristic in a board member, is he listens to science, he listens to the department, and he fully considers decisions in light of sound management principles. So I would urge you guys to support him and to pass his name on. And also in that same vein, I do support Mr. Brown's reappointment. Although he hasn't been on the board, this is at the end of his first term. We found him to be very approachable, easy to talk to. I think he brings a unique perspective to the board with his background in natural resource economics. That's something that I don't believe in my time around the Board of Fish process. There's been quite that background on the board. So it's a valuable perspective. I think he does his homework. He's prepared. And I think he would be a good asset to the board by serving another term. And thank you for letting me comment on all three.
You bet, Mr. Brown. Thank you for your comments. Any questions from any of the members? Hearing none. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Anybody in the audience present would like to come up and testify? Yes, Mr. Giesen. Go ahead and put yourself on the record again, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ruben Hanke. I'm from Soldotna. And I'm here representing myself today. I'd just like to say John's been a great board member for the last 9 years. He's picked up a lot of knowledge in certain parts of the state that he didn't participate in. However, the thing about John is he's held a lot of permits around the state and fished in a lot of these fisheries, so has a lot of practical knowledge of these places as well. So I just want to be in full support of John, and thank you for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Questions? Seeing none, thank you. Anybody else in the audience, please come forward. State your name and your affiliation for the record, and we'll hear your testimony on confirmation of Mr. Jensen.
I'm Mike Crawford. I'm from Soldotna, Alaska. I'm the chairman of the Fish and Game Advisory Committee in Kenai and Soldotna, although I'm not speaking for them here. I'd like to support Mr. Jensen. He's been a valuable part of that board, understanding of my lack of knowledge in some issues, and has always had time, even after lengthy meetings, to talk to me and explain his point of view on different issues. And I'd like to support Mr. Jensen.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. We've now been joined by Representative Pruitt also, so we have a full committee right now. And Representative Vice Chair Johnson has also joined us. Any other public testimony on the appointment of Mr. Jensen to the Board of Fish? Seeing none, the public testimony is now closed. And is there any other comments from committee members? Seeing none, we'll move on to the final hearing on William Brown, the governor's final reappointment to the Board of Fisheries. Mr. Brown, if you'd please come up, take your place, give us your name, and tell us a bit about yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is, excuse me, my name is William S. Bill Brown. I live in Juneau. I've lived in Alaska for 20 years. I'm single, and I have no children. I've served on the board for 1 3-year term. The main reason I'd like to be confirmed for a second term is the same reason I applied in the first place. I want to help preserve our fishery resources for our children, our grandchildren, and their children. Managed correctly, our fish will last forever, but only if managed correctly. I think I bring two things to the Board of Fish. First, my degree in economics. I hold a doctorate in economics and have spent over 20 years teaching college before I retired in 2000. Provided training in statistical methods, population dynamics, and the economic rationale for fishery regulation. My background in statistics proved especially valuable in my first term on the board because it enabled me to understand and analyze the models used to estimate optimal sustained yield and other key parameters important in designing regulations. Second, my training in economics also helps me understand and calculate the economic impact of various fisheries around the state. Biology matters and social issues matter, but so does economics. My first term on the board was not uneventful, not by a long shot. I didn't have a clue as to how much work was involved. For example, we had over 8,000 pages of reading material for the Upper Cook Inlet meeting. And as a member of the board, I had to make tough decisions, many of which were unpopular in some circles. And while fewer bashful and telling me just how much they disliked a particular decision, I know that my votes were the product of logic and careful consideration. I take the board seriously. I recognize the importance and I want to improve our fisheries, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Questions from members? Representative Herron.
I yield to
Representative Osterman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for serving, and I know what kind of a job it is. Same question I had for Mr. Jensen in reference to outlining the subsistence port fish commercial, if there's a priority in your mind as you go through that process because of the job that you guys have as allocators of the resource.
It would be hard to improve on Mr. Jensen's answer because I, too, would say sustainability is by far the most important issue. If there are fish that can be harvested, my personal view would say subsistence comes first. After that, we'll look at the allocation criteria. That's the history of the fishery, alternative fishery resources, and survival factors, and try to be fair in dividing up the fisheries. As you know, a huge part of the Board of Fish is making these allocation decisions. They're always difficult. Often when one group gets more, another group gets less. We just have to be sure why we're doing it. We have to study it. We have to think carefully. It's never easy. We look at sustainability. We look at the history of the fishery and do as best we can.
Thank you. Follow-up question, Representative Osterman.
Thank you. It's similar to the other question with Mr. Jensen. Do you, by any chance, serve on the protocol committee?
No, I don't.
In your opinion, should the Board of Fish be more interactive in making recommendations to the North Pacific Council in reference to the sustainability and the bycatch issues that they're dealing with in reference not only to the salmon industry but also to what's going on with the halibut?
We should. I know we wrote a letter 2 years ago about the bycatch in the Bering Sea, and we discussed the bycatch in the Gulf. Letters are nice. I wish we had more authority. One issue that's bothered me related to the halibut issue is that when the North Council makes decisions on halibut catch, it feeds back on other fish that we do have responsibility for. For example, many of the charter operations, now that they can catch, it looks like this year, one halibut 37 inches or less, they're going to start targeting rockfish. And as you know, rockfish are long-lived species. They're easy to catch. They can't sustain the kind of pressure they may get as a byproduct of decisions made by the North Council. So I would hope that we have more interaction with the North Council. One reason I play poker with the North Council guys is to try to tell them these kinds of things. But so far, we're sort of the tail behind the whole process.
Thank you. Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brown, as a follow-up to the majority leader's question is, and your answer was, is yes, we should have an effect on the North Pacific Council. So you said you wrote letters, but if you could change something, what would be your suggestion?
I don't have as much knowledge as they do, so I'm speaking with partial knowledge. But I think we should dramatically lower the king salmon bycatch. I would like to require salmon excluders on all of the trawl fleet. And I would like to have hard caps so that once they catch, I won't pick a number, but once they catch a bycatch of king salmon, they stop the fishery. I think all over the state we've got serious problems with king salmon. There are very few runs with king salmon that are in good shape, and we need to work on it now. I know that an earlier question was about what we did in Yukon. We put in different size nets. We let a pulse go through. We've done a lot of things. I mean, we've done everything, the board, everything we can do on the Yukon, I think, to help the king salmon. Maybe we could have shallower nets too, but we've done just about everything. And if we're concerned about king salmon, we've got to look at ocean events, and we have little control on the ocean events. So I would like the North Council to be more more serious about stopping the bycatch.
Two more questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herron, go right ahead.
In your opinion, does the Board of Fisheries need to improve its relationship with Alaska subsistence users?
Let me just say this. I know that at every meeting we have proposals that deal with subsistence issues. We treat those more seriously, at least as seriously as anything else. We have a whole set of criteria on how we set CNT fines and what the ANS is. We take it very, very seriously. Now, should we improve the relationship? It wouldn't hurt. We certainly probably should. I've been very pleased and proud both that this past year we've had a new member on the board who's a subsistence advocate, Mike Smith. I've learned a lot from him. I think he's taken these issues very seriously, and things are improving. But I would think the board, it'd be better, we need to improve our relationship with all constituency groups. I mean, there are times, I mean, many of the people who have spoken have said, Mr. Jensen is approachable. I'd like to think that I'm approachable as well. But the backstory there is sometimes some of the constituents think the Board of Fish aren't as approachable as we should be. I think we should be more so, if anything.
Final question, Mr. Chairman.
Go right ahead, Representative Herron.
Mr. Brown, I've read your resume, and I listened carefully to how you talked about the resume, and I appreciate your service to the Board of Fisheries in the state of Alaska. Can you give me one example how you've used your education in economics in dealing with any issue that you've faced on the Board of Fish?
Let me give you two. One very quick one. In our Upper Cook Inlet meeting, we had several stocks of concern that we're studying, and we got some studies that we designated several stocks of concern, and we took measures to deal with those, I hope adequately. We got some studies from the department. They constructed some mathematical models on how they would estimate the optimal yield and how many fish could be caught. And I think they made a statistical error in their models, and I caught that and we discussed it. Okay. Now, another case, and this is sort of gives the overview that I have whenever I analyze issues. One of the things that I'm perhaps notorious for, my first year on the Board of Fish, it came to my attention that there was a burgeoning small sport fishery for black cod in southeast Alaska. But black cod had no limits on them. If a sport fisherman wanted to, he could go out and catch 1,000 a day every day. And I thought it was appropriate to establish a limit on black cod. So I was a leading force on the board to put in a limit. We now have a limit of 4 fish per day on sport cod, black cod. I think that's good. And the board, we spent a lot of time talking about it. It's a new fishery, and that agreed to it. Well, that proposal got quite a bit of resistance from commercial black cod fishermen, as you might think it would. That's a high-value fishery. They thought that those fish were theirs and they didn't belong to sport fishery. But as I looked into it, I discovered that the total black cod fishery combined sport, personal use, and subsistence was less than 2% of the value of the commercially caught black cod. And that kind of data analysis, and then I looked at the economic value of the sport caught black cod and compared it to the 2% of the catch of the commercial catch, and that kind of analysis made it, in my mind, a pretty clear decision that we should allow sport people to catch 2% of the catch of the commercial catch. It's that kind of I'm trained in numbers, and I look at the numbers, and I say, gee, we shouldn't get up, we shouldn't fight this versus that. It's a small number. It should be okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further questions from members for Mr. Brown? Mr. Brown, if we could get a copy of your statements you read, we would sure appreciate that. We'll pass it out to the members.
Certainly can. Complete with typos.
That's all right. Seeing no other questions, we'll open this up to public testimony. Anybody wish to come forward and testify about the appointment of Mr. Brown? Seeing none, Mr. Brown. Oh, we have one coming up. If you please.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Now you're back. Yes, please place your name on the record and give us your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
My name is Ricky Geese. I'm the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We'd like to go on the record as with Mr. Jensen, our full support for Dr. Brown. I believe the two issues that he brought forth that are strengthened his resume are we have witnessed in his first term on the board. His background in economics and his background in statistics have been very valuable to the Board of Fisheries. I think when you're dealing with sustainability, a lot of the issues do come down to statistical models, and I think it's very valuable for the Board of Fisheries to have a person as well-trained as Dr. Brown in statistics. He has a good grasp of numbers and uses that to engage the department to more fully explain the numbers and statistics behind the models that are so important to ensure the sustainability of the fisheries. Also, I do think it's very important that the board, as quite a few of the allocation criteria do come down to economics, that there's a person trained on the board in economics and has a good grasp of explaining economics and the rationale for decisions based on economics. With those other issues, I've found Dr. Brown to be very approachable at the Board of Fisheries. He listens to people. He's been a good board member and also a good person who runs committees in a fair and balanced manner. So with that, we give him our full support.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Thank you very much for your testimony. Yes. Again, place your name on the record and your affiliation so the recorder can get it correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ruben Hanke, Soldotna. I'm representing myself today. I'd like to echo Mr. Geese's comments about Mr. Brown. And one thing I might add, Mr. Brown, it comes to the meetings very prepared. I mean, I know these guys have a lot of work to do and in order to do that. And some folks, everybody's got a job. But Mr. Brown has done a very good job of making sure that he's very well prepared before he comes to these meetings. And, you can't say enough about his background and statistics. It's just incredible. He does a really good job of looking these models over, and he gets them. He understands them. And that sometimes is hard for other people, and I think he works with other people on the board to help them, get a grasp of some of this stuff. So I'm in full support of Mr. Brown. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Anybody else in the audience wants to come forward? Please place your name on the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Mike Crawford from Soldotna, speaking for myself. I'm a member of the Kenai Soldotna. I'm the chairman of the Kenai Soldotna Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I've been going to Board of Fish meetings for numerous years. Mr. Brown's always been available to me to discuss issues. Even on day 12, 13, 14 of a very long several weeks of meetings, he runs a very effective committee, asked good questions in that committee. Like they were saying, his knowledge of numbers was became very evident that was very important, and it does catch people when they try to put some different kind of math forward. So that's a valuable asset, and I'd like to support Mr. Brown on the Board of Fish.
Thank you. Members have questions of Mr. Crawford? Hearing none, Mr. Crawford, thank you very much for your testimony.
Your time.
Also online, we have Robin Samuelson that'd like to speak to the appointment of Mr. Brown. Mr. Samuelson, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead and place your name on the record again, state your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony on the appointment of Mr. Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robin Samuelson. I'm a commercial fisherman in Bristol Bay, also a former Board of Fish member, 9 years on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, currently sitting on the Nishigak Advisory Committee. I'm in opposition to Mr. Brown. I think Mr. Brown has done a good job on the economic side, but the sustainability of our communities, he seems to listen to the folks outside of regions, and I think it's very important to the state of Alaska that we have sustainable communities. Sometimes the decisions aren't good decisions, but when you got five advisory committees within Bristol Bay supporting something, and then you go up against Mr. Brown and Mr. Jensen representing outside interests, it's pretty discouraging participating in the whole system. So I'd vote in opposition of Mr. Brown. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, Mr. Samuelson? Hearing none, thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Samuelson. Any further public testimony on appointment of Mr. Brown? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Is there any further questions or comments from the committee members? Seeing none, is this for... Okay, yeah. I have online also Carl Johnston that wanted to make a general comment about the appointments. Mr. Johnston, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and we'll hear your comments.
Thank you. My name is Carl Johnstone. I'm the vice chair of the Alaska Board of Fisheries. I'm speaking on behalf of myself, not the full board. I would have said something in favor of John Jensen when he was... when he made his testimony, I would say essentially what I've heard other people say about him. While we do not often agree on regulatory changes, I enjoy and benefit from his advocacy, and when we do agree, he's a very strong ally. You heard his testimony and his experience. Probably there's no person that's been on the board that has more experience in the commercial fisheries than John Jensen, and we benefit from that experience. His experience is particularly valuable because there are several new members who are not as familiar with the process as John is, and his institutional knowledge helps maintain some continuity on the board. So I'd be in support of him as for a fourth term. I also know Bill Brown quite well, having served with him for approximately 3 years. I was appointed about 3 years ago, and he was recently appointed right before that. He's proven to be a most effective and valuable board member. His background in economics and statistics has made it possible for the board to understand the science that is often presented by the department. The department has benefited as well because when the board is more fully informed, it makes better decisions, which the department often needs to implement. His participation in making inquiry has put the board's decision-making ability at a higher level than perhaps seen in the past. He often carries the board in his examination and inquiry in areas we are, as laypersons, unfamiliar with. He reads and assimilates data rapidly and gives us a degree of professionalism we would not otherwise have. He studies very hard. He listens to users and user groups carefully. He takes seriously advisory committee comments and is always prepared. He is precise in his comments during deliberations and is a very active participant in the deliberative process. I personally enjoy, and I think the rest of the board members enjoy and benefit working with such a talented person, and I urge his confirmation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate that. Any questions from the members? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. And we've closed public testimony, so any other discussion amongst the members? And then without objection, the House Special Committee on Fisheries, having reviewed these qualifications, will forward Ms. Jeffries, Mr. Jensen, and Mr. Brown's names on to the joint session from the legislature for further consideration. And we'd like to thank all three of the appointees for joining us this evening and their willingness to serve. Now we'll take a brief at ease while the members sign the committee report. Members, remember that by signing the report, it does not reflect a member's intent to vote for or against any of the appointees during any further sessions for the purpose of a confirmation. Brief at ease. Last order of business this evening is to begin consideration of House Bill 85. The sponsor, Representative Seaton, who has been with us, by the way, I forgot to recognize you at the start of the meeting. He's with us with his staff, Louis Flora, and also on hand from the administration are Mr. Tom Crawford, Director of Office of Project Management and Permitting at the Department of Natural Resources, Ms. Lynn Kent, Director of Department of Conservation Division of Water, and they are available to answer questions should the members have any. With that, Representative Seaton, if you would please take your place up here, put your name on the record, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much to you and the committee for hearing this bill tonight. You know, our renewable resources are something that we vitally need to protect, and a water discharge permit is a privilege to use our public waters. And Alaska waters receive varying amounts of pollution discharges under the parameters of discharge permits. And those mixing zones that are permitted is an area where the discharge can exceed the water quality standards while the effluent plume is mixed with the surrounding water, and the water standards must be met at the edge of that plume. Current regulations allow freshwater spawning areas to be designated as mixing zones if salmon are not actively spawning, that is, laying eggs at the time of the water discharge, and it also allows mixing zones in the area of spawning for other resident fish that are vitally necessary for subsistence and other uses. This bill would take us back to the list that we had pre-2003 and prevent mixing zones on for anadromous fish and also for the statutorily listed species that were there. You know, it's just important that we make sure that we are not having mixing zones in spawning areas. It doesn't mean that there can't be mixing zones in those same water bodies. It just means that the mixing zone can't be in the area where the fish spawn. The other provision of the bill, or there's two other provisions. The second one is there's a public right to know section. These mixing zone permits are given out, and there's no way for the public to know the amounts of discharge that are made or the amounts of the pollutant that is discharged over time into those. So this would require on new permits that the amount of discharge was reported to DEC and that they would post it on their website so that the public would have the right to know what is going into our public waters. The third section of this bill involves commercial sewage lagoons, and there are issues where and what it does is says if there is a permitted sewage lagoon and it's expanding by over 50%, then public notice has to go out for the surrounding landowners to have notice and have an opportunity to comment. This was a situation in my district where there was a permitted facility, pump out facility, that was then brought to that area and discharged, and it had a capacity of 1,500 gallons a day, and then people were noticing it was being visited by many trucks, and turned out that just by a review without any public comment, the amount was increased to 6,000 gallons a day, and the people are noticing smells and other things. Of course, the area had grown up over the years. This was originally issued in 1985 and then expanded greatly a few years ago. And so all this does is say that if there's going to be an expansion of a sewage lagoon discharge area that's over 50%, then DEC would have to notify the surrounding landowners and they'd have the ability to comment. So, Mr. Chairman, basically, that's what the bill does. It looks to make sure that we go back to protecting all our fish species. It is only talking about fish that spawn in nests. Those fish that spawn by broadcast spawning, in other words, laying the eggs out in the water, it doesn't include those fish species. So just to be clear, Arctic grayling, even though they're named fish on that list that was made up by ADF&G years and years ago, that's not included because they're a broadcast spawner. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions, or there may be people to testify on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Questions from the members for the sponsor, Representative Herron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, so HB 85 will grandfather in existing wastewater facilities with mixing zones, for which DEC has not taken any previous action. So a village wastewater mixing zone that's currently unpermitted may be grandfathered in, or will be grandfathered in?
It will be grandfathered in. the grandfather clauses in here are so that if there was not a permitted action, then it does have a grandfather clause.
Follow-up question, Representative Harris.
Mr. Chairman, I just have two questions for DEC when it's their turn.
Okay. Further questions of the sponsor, Representative Harris, Seaton. Seeing none, then we will, yes, Representative Miller.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Seaton, for bringing this forward. I'm only going to assume that somewhere in statute or in some other location we have a clear definition of what constitutes water pollution, or is that contained in here somewhere?
The water quality standards that the state has are used for determining amounts and levels of discharges that are permitted. And I should have noted earlier that there are exceptions in this bill for stream bed disturbance, you know, water turbidity, and private sewage systems. So those are in there. The mixing zone permit will actually designate the concentrations and will identify the area of plume where it, then at the edge of that plume, it has to meet the water quality standards.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, I'm trying to remember some of the discussion that has taken place over the years in reference to this issue. One of the, if I remember correctly, one of the issues that was raised was that a development goes in and alters a stream flow, and then there's a different stream flow, and maybe there had never been salmon in it before, but because of the alteration and because of that stream flow, and then maybe the development was discharging into that non-anadromous stream, but then the salmon showed up and became the problem. Is that covered at all in reference to what is not traditionally an anadromous fish stream, but then can become?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and this was a problem when I first introduced this bill a number of years ago. By statute, there was actually a problem with Valdez, where they had a wastewater treatment plant. They had a canal that went out and took that discharge. You know, pink salmon are very prolific. They moved into that stream, and then all of a sudden, Valdez was in the problem of not being able to discharge into that, because this is only concerning freshwater, not marine waters. And so that was specifically addressed in the first version of the bill, and it's contained here, and it's also been picked up by DEC, and they incorporated some of that into regulations. So what we did was we said any artificial channel or artificial settling pond or anything like that that is man-made, then if it gets invaded by a spawning species that is covered, that cannot be declared as a mixing zone. I mean, excuse me, cannot be declared as a spawning area that would kick in the bill. And so that's that was one of the things that we specifically covered. There were a few other things that were exempted just for, but I think that that's probably what you were asking.
Further questions to Representative Seaton from the committee? Seeing none, we'll now hear from the administration. I know we've got received quite a bit of information from the Department of Environmental Conservation. I believe online we have Lynn Kent. Are you there, Lynn?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Yes. Would you please state your name and affiliation for the record, and then we'll have some questions for you.
Right. This is Lynn Kent, and I'm the director for the Water Division at Department of Environmental Conservation.
Thank you. Ms. Kent, we've got a lot of information, and it looked to us like, looks to me like possibly DEC is opposed to this particular bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We've looked at this version of the bill and some previous versions that were similar. Some of the concerns that we had have been addressed by this version of the bill, but we still have some significant concerns with the bill and think that it goes beyond what is necessary in order to protect fish in our waters. submitted some written testimony on that to you.
Members should have that written testimony. Questions of Ms. Kent from the members?
Yes,
Representative Herron.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Two questions to Lynn. Lynn, in the first sentence of paragraph 2 of your number 2 comment, it's, you know, while these protections are not necessary from a scientific perspective. It states, it's not scientifically necessary to protect Adronomous salmon spawning streams from mixing zones. So what is your scientific evidence that supports this statement?
Thank you, Representative Herron, through the chair. What we're trying to explain here is that you don't need a flat-out prohibition on mixing zones and spawning areas for any fish, including salmon, although the DEC regulations do prohibit mixing zones and salmon spawning areas. We say that because there are certain contaminants that don't have a negative effect on fish. Fecal coliform is a good example of that, where you could have a fecal coliform mixing zone and it wouldn't have any impact on salmon or spawning salmon. So you wouldn't need to have a flat-out prohibition on that sort of a mixing zone. We did, in our DEC regulations revisions for mixing zones, go ahead and retain the prohibition on mixing zones for salmon spawning areas, more for the public perception issue than because there was necessarily a risk to salmon from authorized mixing zones.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 1, just about in the center of the page, the following statement appears: some pollutants cannot be reported in terms of amount, such as fecal coliform, bacteria, radioactivity, and turbidity. How are these things measured?
Thank you, Representative Miller, through the chair. Some of the water quality standards, or the parameters that we have for water quality standards, could be measured in terms of amount or quantity in certain circumstances. But our water quality standards are generally based on a concentration of a contaminant in the water body, because it's that concentration in the water body that has the potential effect on fish or other aquatic life. So it's not the amount that's discharged or the pounds that are discharged, it's the resultant concentration in the water body.
Just because I'm a layman in this field, could you give me an example? Is it going to look like there are so many milliliters per cubic foot, or what? How does this actually come out?
Yes, Representative Miller, through the chair. The water quality standards are based on, in general, micrograms per liter. So it's a concentration, in more layman's terms, parts per millions or parts per trillion of a substance in the water. So the water quality standards are based on that kind of a concentration, as are our discharge permits.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative Osterman.
Thank you. I'd like to go back to Representative Herron's question in reference to the number 2 within the department's testimony about the scientific or on page 2 it talks about regulations since 19 been protected by regulations since 1975. And if I understood your testimony correctly, you believe that regulations already cover the issue, and so we don't need statutes. But so you're opposed to statutes, but you're not opposed to having regulation. So you don't want law, you just want regulation to govern?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, the regulations that have been on the books since 1975 have had a prohibition on mixing zones in anadromous fish spawning areas. And we changed those regulations in 2006 that allow, under some very limited circumstances, a mixing zone in a resident fish species spawning area where there's no impact to fish to spawning or to future spawning in that area. We retained the flat-out prohibition for mixing zones in salmon spawning areas with the 2006 regulations. So that hasn't changed since 1975.
Follow-up question, Representative Osterman.
My point is, if you approve, if you feel you're covered by regulations, aren't you also covered if it's a statute instead of a regulation?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, yes, that's correct, except that this bill goes beyond what we have in our current regulations and is much more stringent than our regulations are, than the regulations need to be in order to protect fish. There really isn't a difference between our regulations when it comes to a prohibition on mixing zones in salmon spawning areas and the bill, but there are a lot of other differences between our regulations and the bill.
Thank you. My second question, Mr. Chairman.
Right ahead, Representative Osterman.
Item number 5 in your paper talks about the prohibited mixing zones that become a fish spawning area unless the discharge is from public or private domestic water, wastewater facility. And I think that was the question that I asked Representative Seaton a minute ago, and he said that there's already action had already been taken last time around to cover this issue. But you're still opposed because of this? Or did I get bad information here?
You're looking at number 5 on my written testimony?
Number 5, yes, ma'am.
Yes, Representative Osterman, through the chair. As I read the bill, or the draft legislation here, this exception or this grandfather clause only applies to domestic wastewater facilities. We also permit industrial facilities, and our thinking is that if we've permitted an industrial facility to have a wastewater discharge and salmon later move into that mixing zone, that those should also be grandfathered in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herron.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My second question to Lynn. Lynn, let's move to number 4 in your testimony. And that's my question is, so it states it's not necessary to protect non-salmon species such as smelt from mixing zones because they're not economically important. So my question, well, it's a two-part question. First part, so you don't recognize subsistence as an economically important activity, and smelt are a major food prey species for salmon, and they help support healthy salmon stocks. So they're not economically important from that perspective?
Representative Herron, through the chair, no, that's not at all what we were intending to apply here. The intent here is that we don't need a flat-out prohibition on mixing zones in non-salmon spawning areas because we can, in certain circumstances, authorize a mixing zone in those areas that would not have a negative impact on those species. And we don't think that those kinds of mixing zones need to be prohibited. So if you were to take a look at DEC's regulations, or actually you have a handout there, that includes all of the mixing zone requirements that are in our regulations, including a kind of a 19-part test about all the things that we have to demonstrate or find in order to authorize a mixing zone. And most of those requirements are aimed at protection of all of the aquatic life there, not just the salmon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions of Ms. Kent from committee members? Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there any documented cases where either domestic or industrialized discharge has come into conflict that this bill may help?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, I'm not quite sure what you mean by in conflict.
Well, I'm assuming that that we've had issues in the past of discharge in certain areas that may have created problems, and I'm not sure that, you know, if we pass something that restricts those types of mixing zones, and maybe my assumption is incorrect that there's never been a problem.
Yes, Representative Osterman. Well, one of the examples that I can that comes to mind is in the past and even today. We have mixing zones that are authorized on a temporal basis or seasonal basis so that the facility can only discharge when salmon spawning are not present, or spawning fish are not present, and where the discharge will not have a negative impact on future spawning of fish in that area. So the way this bill defines spawning area, it includes those locations in a water body, even though spawning fish may not be present, and even though a potential discharge might not have an effect on future spawning. So there is a conflict there where we may be prohibiting mixing zones in areas where we really don't need to prohibit them in order to protect fish.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee from Ms. Kent? Seeing none, Ms. Kent, thank you very much for your testimony. Also online we have, for questions if the committee has them, we have Attorney General's Office Cameron Leonard, and we have Tom Crawford from the Department of Natural Resources. If the committee would like to hear from them or anybody else on the, from the administration. Seeing none, then we'll now open it up to public testimony. We have people online and in the audience who'd like to speak to this subject. Online, we have Brian Kraft. Mr. Kraft, are you there?
Yes, good evening.
Yes, please.
Brian Kraft. I live in Anchorage, business owner. Have three sport fishing lodges in Alaska, two in Bristol Bay, one in Kodiak Island. And I'm in full support of House Bill 85. Appreciate it being introduced and being worked so hard by Representative Seaton. I'm not a scientist by any means, but I will tell you that I have over 1,000 people that visit my lodges each year, and the reason they come is because of our healthy fisheries. I just received today a renewal notice for my registration of all my boats, and in that came with it a flyer from Alaska DEC telling about how important it is to keep our rivers clean and our waters clean, and to change from two-stroke motors to four-stroke motors, and that one small quart of oil dripped into the water can put a sheen on the size of it, size of a football field. So we're going to great extent, and actually just even listening to the Board of Fish testimonies and being part of the Board of Fish process, we are going to great extent to ensure that our fisheries remain healthy, that our waterways remain pristine, and anything that we can do to encourage that and continue with that trend is a positive thing. It's positive for business. It makes economical sense. You know, our fisheries, even though the fish spawn, those waters still contain nutrients that feed the eggs, the embryo, and then on it, or not the embryo, but the fry and the smolt, and resident fish feed on those fish, and it's a continuous cycle that perpetuates the strong runs of salmon that we have. So I'm in full support of it. I think it makes sense not only on a perception basis that the state of Alaska takes care of its waters better than any state in the union, but also on an economical sense for businesses such as mine.
Committee members have any questions of Mr. Kraft? Mr. Kraft, thank you very much for your testimony. Also online we have Brenda Dolma. Brenda, are you there?
I am. I'm Brenda Dolma in Homer, Alaska. Thank you for all your work as we're listening. I am in full support of House Bill 85, as I feel some of our most important resources are Alaskans' clean water, our clean food, and our valuable resource of some of the last wild salmon fisheries in the world. And this bill supports and protects what we have that is unique in the world. And I think as we move into the future that we're going to see that by making this permanent for perpetuity that this is sustainable, protecting Alaskans' water and our fabulous spawning salmon. And I just have to make note that we live on this throughout the winter, and it's very, very important food for our family, and I'd like to see this for my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. So thank you for all this work, and I just would like to say I am in full support of House Bill 85. Thank you.
Ms. Dolma, just for the record, we'd like to hear your affiliation. What do you do?
I'm retired.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm blessed. I guess if you were to ask our community member, I would be super volunteer, parent, and active community member.
I retired twice, but here I am back at it again. So,
thank you
very much, Ms. Dolma. Anybody have any questions, members? Thank you very much for your testimony. Don't have anybody else online, but we have Michael Satry. If you'd please come forward. Please state your name for the record, give us your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
All right, good evening. Thank you, Chair Thompson and the rest of the House Fisheries Committee for allowing me the opportunity to testify on HB 50, or 85. My name is Mike Satry. I'm a resident of Juneau, Alaska. And I'm currently employed as the Executive Director of the Council of Alaska Producers, and I'm speaking on their behalf tonight. Council of Alaska Producers is a nonprofit trade association representing the large metal mines and large developmental metal projects here in the state of Alaska. The DEC has submitted some extensive technical data for you to review relative to the proposed HB 85, so I'd like to step back a little bit and maybe look at this proposal from a little higher level. One of the many challenges of developing communities and projects within our great state is managing the impacts we have on our aquatic resources. Every single community and work camp generates some sort of wastewater, and most, if not all, of our projects have some sort of process or contact water that must be dealt with. If this water is to be discharged back into the environment, we have some very, very strict water quality standards that must be met in order to avoid impacting our surface waters. Unfortunately, even with the best available treatment technologies, it is still possible that treated water may not meet our very, very stringent standards at the point of discharge. This is why the state of Alaska, with authority granted by the Clean Water Act and the EPA, allows for the permitting of mixing zones in order for wastewater that may be just slightly out of compliance to be diluted into a permittable discharge. So let's think about this for a bit. When people think mixing zones, they think of some rusty pipe that's dumping some sort of black, odorous liquid into our pristine streams and rivers, but that's absolutely not the case. We have very, very technologically advanced water treatment systems that are in place both in our communities and at our projects, and water will go through that treatment system. And it's always possible there may be some small level of metal or maybe some small some small detail in that water that doesn't allow us to meet the permitting standards, the discharge standards, where it would normally go back into our lakes and rivers. So we take a very, very small piece of our fresh water or our salt water. These things are very common in our coastal communities, in our salt water. And we allow it to mix with the existing water, dilute it out to a permissible discharge, and we go on from there. These zones, whether they're in fresh or salt water, are permitted through a rigorous scientific process and are a method of last resort to allow our communities and projects to meet water quality standards. In fresh water, the requirements for a mixing zone are even stricter than in salt water. And this makes sense. The volumes of water are relatively smaller when we're dealing with lakes, rivers, and streams, as opposed to, say, the Gatineau Channel, where we've had mixing zones permitted for the Juneau Douglas wastewater treatment plant. So the very toilets that flush in this building go into a mixing zone into our beautiful Gatineau Channel. But it works. It allows water to meet our standards. So these requirements are incredibly strict in freshwater. Most importantly, under the existing regulations, if a proposed mixing zone contains a spawning area for any of the five Pacific salmon species, it cannot be permitted. Now, I understand that in the definition, we're looking at both a temporal and a spatial definition of spawning, that the fish actually have to be spawning in that area for it to count as a spawning area. But there are certainly other criteria that have to be met, and I urge you to review in the DEC packet of documents this beautiful summary of all the parts and pieces that a mixing zone must meet in order to be permitted. Mixing zones and freshwater spawning areas of other fish other than the five Pacific salmon species must meet statewide water quality standards plus other conditions imposed by the Fish and Game and the DEC. There must be an improved mitigation plan, and we cannot adversely affect the capability of an area to support future spawning, incubation, and rearing activities. Existing mixing zone regulations allow our communities and our projects to meet our strict water quality standards and ensure we can strike a balance between developing our state and protecting our environment. HB 85, in our opinion, will disrupt this balance by introducing a blanket prohibition on allowing mixing zones where any anadromous fish spawn or where the resident fish reds are located for that long list of fish species listed in the proposed AS4603-065-2. This lack of flexibility will place additional and possibly insurmountable hurdles on potential development in our state. The Council of Alaska Producers urges you to not pass this bill out of committee. We have a very rigorous, science-based permitting system. Our regulations do a wonderful job of protecting our aquatic resources, and we don't believe any change is necessary at this time. Thank you for your time this evening.
Any questions from the committee of Mr. Satre? Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else online or in the audience who would like to testify to House Bill 85? Seeing none. Representative Seaton, are there any final comments you'd like to make on House Bill 85 before us this evening?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that. First, a few clarifications just to make sure everybody understands. This only applies to freshwater, not to saltwater. Saltwater mixing zones are not covered at all. On page 3 of the bill, you'll see on starting on line 6, the prohibition does not apply to turbidity mixing zone for suction dredge, placer mine, or mechanical placer mine that the department finds with the concurrence of Fish and Game will not adversely affect the present and future spawning and incubation of fish. I would like to point out that some of the species that are not considered, and you can have the mixing zone while those fish are spawning on those areas, would be, you know, Arctic char, Olive Arden, lake trout, landlocked coho king, or sockeye salmon, rainbow trout, sheafish, and whitefish. And some of these species are very important subsistence species in our inland waters. I think that DEC's comments that, yes, we have a allowance or a grandfathering for the wastewater discharge, but they would like the ability to do industrial pollutants or industrial discharges that are above the level on those spawning areas. That's what I wish, and many people wish, to say no to, that development should occur, but development should occur in a way that protects our renewable resources and our fish species that are important to all Alaska residents. I would like to point out that on the chart that DEC presented, you'll notice that, quote, the old 2003 regulations, which have many of the identical properties to this bill, are the ones they're still enforcing, because the regulations that they're talking about that were promulgated in 2006 have not yet been approved by EPA. So when you look at those charts, remember that what they're enforcing is right now under the 2003 regs, still many of those provisions are identical to what we have in the current bill. And one of the biggest problems is that sometime along the way, you know, these mixing zone prohibitions were in, or allowances were in, 1973 or 5, and everybody knew what a spawning area was. It's an area where fish spawn, and mixing zones were not allowed. At some time 20 years later, through no regulatory action or no statutory action, that got interpreted as a spawning area was, oh, it's only while the fish are spawning. And that's been one of the problems that we've encountered, is that this interpretation was then taken and moved into policy, and it's being moved into regulations. And this idea that you can have an area where fish spawn and then go ahead and have higher levels of pollution in that area, and that won't affect in the future, is something that is dubious. And I draw the committee's attention to things such as copper discharges. A concentration, and finding out what a concentration is, doesn't really let you know what's happening to that watershed, because the concentration may be out of a pipe that's this big around, or it can be a 3-foot diameter going out. And the mixing zone can't be larger than downstream till you mix with the total volume of the river. So once, it can't be larger than that. So if you've got a creek or a stream or a river, the mixing zone can be the when it mixes with the full volume of that river. So that's a lot of stuff going into the water, and the way we can find out what that will be, and it should be public notice, these are public waters, is that it's reported by pounds or tons per year or whatever, so that the people that have the waters of these state can make sure that they understand what those future implications could be. And I know DEC says, well, our regs say we're not going to influence future anything. But unless we know what those amounts are that are going out there over time, then we're not going to really be able to understand what the potential impact is. And so that's what this bill is trying to get to make sure our renewable resources used by either subsistence or commercial people or just sport harvest. You heard from a lodge owner that we make sure that our natural resources are protected. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herron has a question. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In written testimony, I'd like you to comment on one sentence. It says, no problem has been identified that this bill is meant to correct.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'm not sure which part of the bill they're talking about. I can definitely tell you that having no knowledge of what's going into and concentrating over time into a system, because we get no reports that are understandable by the public, that's meant to correct. I gave you the situation where DEC is going through and vastly increasing the amount of sewage deposited in sewage lagoons in residential areas without going to public notice. And this would correct that, so that the public would have a notice and the right to comment. And thirdly, the mixing zones in areas of subsistence fish, on those spawning areas and even at those spawning times, I consider that a problem. Can I go out and show you a fish kill? I want to prevent that from ever happening, just like the regulations were before 2003, that was not allowed, and I don't think it should be allowed now. I think the development should go forward, but we want responsible development. We want it done in a way that we never have those problems where I can come to you and say, here's a picture of a big fish kill. We never want to see that, and that's what this bill is hoping to accomplish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any member further questions? Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We've heard quite a bit of testimony, and we've received a lot of written testimony that have a bit of concern on the impact of House Bill 85 might have on resource development across the state. As such, I'm going to hold House Bill 85 so that we can see if those concerns might be allayed. This concludes our business for the evening. Please note that there is no Fisheries Committee meeting scheduled for Thursday, March 31st. However, though there is no agenda as yet, I will be noticing a meeting for next Tuesday. The time is now 6:32 p.m., and there being no further business, I adjourn today's meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries.